sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is music star Sam Glazer, author of The Joy of Judaism, on living through the pandemic in a healthy, happy Jewish way. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and our Mavena on Israel, Imbal Shtivi. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I've been thinking about how challenging it can be to achieve reasonable perspective on the coronavirus pandemic. The problem is that there's more than one way to look at it, and that the way we choose to look at it will dramatically change the way we approach both the problem and its solutions. This impresses me as a very Jewish sort of issue, so I'm choosing to analyze it that way this morning. For example, if you look at the increased number of deaths in America from COVID-19, you can begin by comparing them to the number of Americans who have died in a variety of ways. So far, about 75,000 Americans appear to have died from COVID-19. It may turn out that a number of others have also died from it, but were misclassified because doctors and coroners and so on weren't really sure why somebody died in the early stages of the pandemic. But let's take 75,000 as the current number. That number, of course, is likely to increase in the next few months to something like 100,000. Might be higher, and if there's a second round of infections later this year, of course, it'll go up even more unless we have some miracle cure before then, which seems possible, but not likely. So let's take the 75,000 dead as a real number today. One way to look at this is to compare it to the number of Americans who died in full-on wars. The president declared this to be a war against an invisible enemy, so if we compare it to deaths in other American wars, about 60,000 Americans died in Vietnam. In fact, if you combine the deaths in Vietnam and both Gulf Wars with the deaths in Afghanistan and Iraq, they total about the same number as the deaths during this coronavirus pandemic. When you think about how incredibly disruptive Vietnam was to the fabric of American society, this puts it in quite a challenging perspective, especially when you consider that the Vietnam War lasted for well over 10 years, and these deaths have all taken place in about 3 months. In fact, if you look at all the deaths in all the American wars prior to the Civil War, that includes the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Mexican War, a number of wars against Native American tribes spread out over 80 years or so, they total fewer than the number of deaths in the last 3 months of COVID-19. That's disturbing indeed. Another way to look at it is to consider the number of Americans killed in the 9/11 terrorist attacks, the most shocking time most of us have ever experienced. Now, if you lived through Pearl Harbor, that would likely be more shocking, but Pearl Harbor was 79 years ago, so a lot of us weren't even born then. So let's take the horror of 9/11, a truly awful day in American history. On 9/11, about 3,000 people died, 1/25th the number of Americans who have died from coronavirus. 9/11 changed our lives in many ways, from the very serious to the more trivial. It led to two long-term wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, contributed to many Americans dying and being maimed in those wars. It changed the way we think about our own safety in the U.S., made airplane security vastly more intrusive and unpleasant, upset the entire structure of societies throughout the Middle East, and profoundly affected how we look at the world. And that was slightly fewer than 3,000 deaths, albeit in one day. COVID-19 has now killed over 75,000 people in 3 months, 25 times as many. You can also compare this situation to deaths in World War I. More Americans have died from coronavirus than died in World War I, or World War II, when about 5 times as many Americans died as have died of coronavirus, or the Civil War, when about 10 times as many Americans died. But the mere fact that you can compare the number of Americans who have died in 3 months of COVID-19 to deaths in world wars or the Civil War makes it particularly horrific. When you read the accounts of emergency rooms in New York City in the past couple of months, well, that seems about right. Another way to look at this is to compare it to other ways Americans die suddenly. Over the past few years, between 32,000 and 38,000 Americans die annually from car crashes. That's about half the total of COVID-19 deaths so far. The car crash numbers include pedestrians, motorcyclists, and bicycle riders killed by cars, by the way. That means that in 3 months, coronavirus has wiped out double the total killed by autos in an average year. Lots of people are comparing COVID-19 with the Spanish flu epidemic of a century ago, 1918 to 1919, that killed 50 million people worldwide. By contrast, this version of the novel coronavirus has killed about 300,000 people around the world. Remember, 75,000 of those in America, a small fraction of the total decimated by the Spanish flu 101 years ago. That makes this seem far less devastating. And it's interesting that our means of preventing it are basically the same as they were back then, or, frankly, in the Tanakh, in the Hebrew Bible 3,000 years ago, quarantine, isolation, shelter in place, lockdown, etc. It's also clear that the flu a century ago was particularly severe because of poor sanitation, the inability to isolate people, and the close living conditions of so much more of the world back then. We've been protected in many places like America by, frankly, having larger living spaces and much more proactive governmental responses in many nations during COVID-19. That's prevented the infection from spreading unchecked, as the flu did a century ago. Our ability to test people, isolate them, and trace their contacts if infected has helped tremendously in those nations that have aggressively taken the initiative to utilize these methods, like Israel. That has saved many lives. Without examining the relative effectiveness of our own national governmental response to COVID-19, it is fair to note that the U.S. has more reported cases than any nation on Earth, with about a middling fatality rate. All the statistics in a worldwide pandemic are going to be messy, because different countries count things differently, because testing is still very limited in many places, especially right here in America, to be frank. But we are not yet out of the woods, unlike countries like Israel, which took a vastly more aggressive approach to preventing the spread of the novel coronavirus. As Israel now carefully and intentionally eases restrictions, it is doing so with a systematic approach guided by scientific knowledge. Most nations can learn a lot from the Israeli approach, including our own. However you choose to look at all these numbers, it is clear that COVID-19 has had a devastating impact on our country, both by killing many people directly and by forcing the U.S. to shut down our economy to prevent many more deaths. It's also clear that had we not shut things down, the number of deaths would have been much higher. The Jewish view of this is quite simple, really. The highest value is pikuach nefesh, protecting life. Of course, everybody needs to eat and to have a means of support, but that is not to be guaranteed at the cost of many lives. So, what perspective can we gain from all of this? Perhaps simply this. Preserving life is the principle that must guide our conduct always. When choosing how best to respond to this unprecedented situation and how thoughtfully we can reopen our economy, we should be guided by this principle, even more than the economic needs of our financial system, corporate structure, or even the needs of our citizenry. It doesn't help to open a restaurant if it's going to become the epicenter of another spread of infection and deaths, or to allow hair salons to become the focal points for more COVID-19 dispersion and contagion, no matter how long your hair or nails have gotten. One of the interesting aspects of the coronavirus pandemic and being locked down and sheltering in our homes for so much of the time this spring has been the way it affects our Jewish experience. It may actually be leading to more religious practice because we have so many fewer distractions. And so to play us in this morning, here's a setting of the Sfirat HaOmer, the The counting of the Omer, a ritual we observe in this period between Passover and Shavuot. It's by Yosef Goldman and friends.
L'shem Yichud Kodesh HaBrichu U'Shchintei Hineni Muchan U'Mezuman L'Kayem Mitzvat Aseh L'shem Yichud Kodesh HaBrichu U'Shchintei Hineni Muchan U'Mezuman לקיים מצפת עשה של ספירת העומר של ספירת העומר של ספירת העומר של ספירת העומר שבע שבת תמימות תהיינה שבע שבתות תמימות תהיינה
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pascua Yaqui Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, a new synagogue in the Catalina foothills and northwest Tucson, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to all throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services Friday and Saturday, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha is located at 2270 West Ina Road, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone in normal times. In these days of coronavirus tsoras, you can join us every Friday night on our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services with our musicians at 6:30 p.m. That's our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson. Or Saturday morning, Shabbat morning services at 10 a.m. with me and Rabbi Baruch Kohan leading them. Our Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson. We will be holding services with full music by virtual experience weekly until we can reopen. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are on Zoom, about 7 a week. You can access that by emailing us at beitsimchatucson.org, rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org. Synagogues at 2270 West Ina Road, west of La Cholla, on the north side of Ina, at the entrance to the Foothills Mall property in our own building. We are a fully functioning virtual congregation on Facebook and Zoom. Email me at rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org to get more information. Find out about Beit Simcha, to come to services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah education, confirmation and high school programs, and rich array of adult education academy courses taught on Zoom, and of course our services on Facebook. Go to Beitsimcha Tucson, beitsimchatucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the newest and fastest-growing Jewish community in southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish good friend, Sam Glazer, who is a Jewish musical luminary, the author of the book The Joy of Judaism. But we're here to really to talk about this very strange, really weird situation of being locked in and coronavirus, and how do we handle being locked down? What's a Jewish way to deal with it and make it meaningful? Sam, how are you doing with all this?
Well, thank you for asking, Sam. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and to be on your show. This is a really strange time. One thing I think that is unique about it is that everyone is experiencing something. Everyone is affected. So at the very best, people are stuck with their loved ones and learning how to deal with them on a new, constant, Groundhog Day basis. But at the most challenging, you know, with the destruction that this disease brings, there is immense fear and suffering physically and economically. The fallout is it's pretty radical. A lot of people have what to rely on in terms of bank accounts or things they can sell or whatever to get by, but a lot of people don't. So I don't know anyone who is not affected, and so there's something universal about this. I saw a post by a friend in Florida who wrote that she's been walking around the streets and noticing that she's trying to share love, and people are not smiling back at her.
Yeah, it's funny. I saw a couple in the market. You know, you're wearing masks. It's sort of hard to tell expressions. And this is an older couple. They had to be in their 70s. They were screaming at each other in the aisle in the market. And I think I'd literally never seen that before. And then somebody else told a story about standing in line. You know, you wait to get into Trader Joe's or wherever it is. And the clerk came out. This was a Fry's. I don't know, it was a market. And said, I'm sorry, but, you know, if you're looking for paper goods, we don't have any toilet paper. We're out of paper towels, all the stuff that's going on. And a couple of people got really irate, and one guy went up and decked him. Yeah. So there can be really negative consequences. People are responding to the pressure and the tension and all of that in sometimes not healthy ways. What's the Jewish attitude? How do you see a good way of responding, of dealing with the kinds of pressures we're all under right now?
Well, one is to bring God into the equation. And by doing so, we don't look at God as punishing us, but challenging us to grow. And that, of course, requires the faith that God only does what is good in this world. And when you're seeing a lot of things going wrong, and it seems like the world is going haywire, and that supposed supervision that quote-unquote religious people cling to falling by the wayside, and it becomes every person for him or herself, it seems to contradict that. But that doesn't mean God isn't here in this disaster.
We'll explore sort of how we find God during this lockdown and coronavirus and COVID-19, and, you know, how to deal with this in a Jewish way to keep your Judaism fresh, which helps keep you fresh, when we come back in just a moment here on Too Jewish. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or a criticism, kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's twojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 Jewish Radio Show Podcast in America, according to Moment Magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, there's been a lot of stories recently about levels of infection in various communities. And among the Hasidic communities, the ultra-Orthodox communities, particularly in New York, there's been a higher incidence of both coronavirus infection and, we think, anyway, so far, mortality. That's a bad statistic, not something anybody wants, but It's an interesting question. Like, why is that true?
It is a good question, and I don't have enough medical knowledge to address the question of mortality rates. I do think that this comes under the rubric of Jews around the world, because ultra-Orthodox communities are scattered around the world, and they're generally found not in places like Sioux City, Iowa, which have low population densities, but in really big cities like New York, LA, London, and obviously throughout Israel. And some cities, towns, villages in Israel are like 100%.
Well, B'nai Brak, for example.
Right, which was completely shut down because the infection rate was so high there.
Right.
So Israel, which had a very tight lockdown anyway, had a particularly tight and longer lasting shutdown in places with a lot of Hasidim. Now, so the question is, this is international. What does it correlate to? Why? I mean, we don't believe that COVID-19 is God's punishment for being evil.
No,
so
certainly not.
Why would Hasidim be struck at a higher rate? And I think there's a couple of answers. One is, all my friends who really are scientists say that there are three factors that explain higher rates of infection: population density. So it happens that where Hasidim live tends generally to be in very densely populated places, like New York City.
Well, another factor, of course, is... they don't believe in birth control. They do think that Pru Revu is an incredibly important commandment, and they tend to have many, many children. And so even in places where the lockdown means you're locked in with your family, where for many Jews around the world, that might be three people or five people if they have three kids, if it's a Hasidic family, I want to make a distinction between modern Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox. We're talking about ultra-Orthodox, not modern Orthodox. It's not a matter of religious observance. It's just sort of a cultural aspect of super large families. You're going to have a lot more people who means that they've been exposed to more other people, right?
Right, but if nobody's going out, that becomes irrelevant.
Yeah, it should be irrelevant. The other part is, don't you think that because it's such a warm, embracing community, that means that there's a lot of events where there's a lot of people. They're used to...
Well, that's the thing I was going to come to next, which is Hasidim are a real community who try to recreate the old style of Jewish life in Eastern Europe, which is lots of community gatherings, minyan three times a day, study sessions, whatever. And those all happen indoors in small cramped places, and they have happened all over the world in spite of governmental bans. So the same thing that gives Hasidim a feeling of tight-knit community also gives them a higher infection rate. And I think we have to talk next time about this funeral of a Satmar Rebbe in New York that just happened.
All right. Thanks, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Mivina in Israel, Inbal Shtivi, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Inbal.
Boker Tov, how are you?
I'm well, but everything is not so well with everyone locked down in Israel with coronavirus. There have been a number of reports of increases in domestic violence. Can you talk a little bit about the situation of women during this experience?
Yes, sure. First of all, the lockdown is being eased a little bit these days, actually, like right now. The economy starts to go back. Educational institutions are coming back. It's slowly but surely things are going back to normal. It will take time, but still, those past 2 months, we've seen the entire Israeli society inside their homes. And just like any other country, there is this phenomena of gender-based violence and domestic violence that happens everywhere, and it happens in Israel as well. Reports have told that there has been an increase of 700% in approaches to the emergency hotlines that are for domestic violence.
700%, seven times the usual reports.
And we know that many, many cases are not being reported. Those victims are afraid. or they cannot, or when, you know, when your aggressor is within the house with you, you just can't do anything, right? And it's 24 hours. So 700% increase. And in the past few weeks, we've witnessed the murder, actually, of several women. So from the beginning of the year, we're talking about more than 10, I think, women who have been killed and by their partners, right? Or family members,
right.
Depending
right.
Where we're talking about. And these are they did not die of corona, but they died because of it. They might have ended up this way anyway, but this for sure, the lockdown and the fact that people are inside the house and tension increases and the way people are losing their jobs, in the phenomena of violence in the house is extremely complicated. It has to do with dependency, it has to do with affection, it has to do with a lot of things, but mostly it has to do with violent pattern behaviors of usually the male part of the partnership. That is very sad. So yesterday, just a minute, but yesterday there was a big demonstration, of course, in Israel, and the entire network of women's organizations are working on it. In between, we know that the council, that the committee that was set up to, to take decisions on how to strategize the easing of the lockdown, et cetera, did not include one woman among 25 or 20 participants, 20 members.
Wow, not one.
Not even one. And that is, of course, against the law. It's against the law of equal opportunities. And so there is a lot of work being done by women's organizations in Israel to combat this phenomena that is both in the house and in other places, places disregard of women's life experiences and et cetera. When it comes to dealing with a national crisis. So the women's organizations argue that these are all linked. You cannot take a decision on how women will behave if there's not even one woman
involved in the process. Right. What, out of 25, it should have been 12 or 13 or something like that, or maybe more.
Yeah.
Well, Inbal, we'll keep track of this story because it's awful. Sorry to hear that. I know that's also been true in America, but I don't think to the same degree.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, because this is a phenomenon that has nothing to do with nationality, religion, anything. This is something that is a world pandemic.
We will talk next week. Thanks so much, Inbal.
Thank you so much.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie and Do, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Shlomo, who is 75 years old, is taking a walk when he sees a frog in the gutter. He's shocked when the frog begins to talk to him. The frog says, "Old man, if you kiss me, I'll turn into a beautiful princess. I'll be yours forever." Shlomo bends down and puts the frog in his pocket and continues walking. The frog says from inside the pocket, "Hey, I don't think you heard me. I said if you kiss me, I'll turn into a beautiful princess." Shlomo takes the frog out of the pocket and says, "I heard you. But at my age, I'd rather have a talking frog." That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portions of Behar Bechukotai, the doubled Torah section at the end of the book of Leviticus. In these final parshiot of the middle book of the Torah, there are interesting oddities and lessons, both at the beginning and the end of each portion. Behar begins with a statement, "God spoke to Moses at Mount Sinai, saying," etc. It's a seemingly unambiguous phrase. And at the end of the opening covenantal section of Bechukotai, the Torah reiterates that God gave all the regulations and laws contained here at Mount Sinai. Finally, Bechukotai concludes the book of Vayikra of Leviticus by telling us, these are the commandments God commanded Moses for the Israelites on Mount Sinai. All right, well and good. These rules of holiness and personal conduct must have been commanded at Sinai. Yet earlier in Leviticus, it makes it clear that God has given most of these commandments not at Mount Sinai itself at all, but in the tabernacle in the wilderness, the Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting, while the people wander around the Sinai. In fact, the whole book of Leviticus is apparently given after we've left Mount Sinai and begun our journey to the Promised Land. Clearly, as Bahar begins, the Israelites don't actually seem to be at Mount Sinai at all. So what gives? The question troubles rabbinic commentators who believe the Torah never wastes a phrase or makes a mistake. Their brilliant answer teaches us a profound truth about ourselves. In the rabbinic understanding, Mount Sinai is not just a geographical location. It's not a simple matter of a specific place at all. Wherever we learn and do mitzvot, whenever we complete ethical acts, do tzedakah, observe religious rituals with sanctity and meaning and purpose, study Torah, or work to perfect the world through tikkun olam, wherever and whenever we strive to make the world a holier, more Jewish place, well, we are standing at Mount Sinai. Almost literally, as committed Jews, we take Mount Sinai with us and bring God's very presence into the world. It's a powerful message indeed. As we conclude the book of Leviticus, focused fully on creating holiness, we learn we can make our own lives as holy as the revelation at Sinai simply by studying and living Torah each day. That is, we create Mount Sinai whenever and wherever we act as good Jews. May we remember to do this today and every day. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Sam Glazer, a Jewish music star and author of the book The Joy of Judaism, explores how we can keep spirits up in this strange time of lockdown and quarantine. That is, how to keep the joy of Judaism in a peculiar time. Find out when we come back on To Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Nearly all Reform Jewish summer camps and at least one conservative camp will remain closed for the 2020 summer due to the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. The landmark decision made late last week will affect 15 Reform overnight camps across the country, which collectively serve some 10,000 campers. The Reform movement, largest in the U.S., is the first to suspend its official summer camp network. This is the first time in over 70 years that the movement is suspending camp. The Reform movement is also canceling all of its trips to Israel and other locations, as well as in-person youth activities. A statement from the URJ, the Union for Reform Judaism, says that if it ends up becoming possible to open the camps, doing so will be our top priority. A handful of Reform camps not run by the URJ are not bound by last week's decision. After months of carefully following and evaluating the evolving COVID-19 situation, the URJ has reached the heartbreaking, difficult, and values-based decision to cancel all in-person activities this summer, said the statement. Although we have continued to plan, prepare, pray, and hope for another transformative summer, the risks posed by COVID-19 threaten our most sacred values, the health and well-being of our children, staff, and faculty who attend camp, along with their communities back home. Ramah Darom, a conservative Jewish camp in Georgia, is also canceling its 2020 summer. An email to the camp community said that Georgia's regulations currently will not allow them to operate the camp, which was scheduled to open in early June. The camp's medical committee decided that even if regulations change, it would be untenable to manage the risk posed by COVID-19. There are more than 180,000 campers and staff at more than 300 Jewish overnight and day camps across the country, according to the Foundation for Jewish Camp, Jeremy Fingerman, the foundation's CEO, said that each camp is going to have to make its own decision regarding the upcoming summer. He estimates that Jewish camps could need $150 million to weather the coronavirus crisis, as the camps that have canceled programs have promised a refund or defer tuition. The Foundation for Jewish Camp is urging camps to cut costs and seek aid to tide them over. Fingerman said that 46 camps have so far received more than $12 million in government loans under federal economic relief legislation. Charitable foundations have also pledged millions in donations to camps in the wake of the crisis. Hopefully it's one season at worst, but for so many people, they're yearning to connect with their camp friends, their camp communities, Fingerman said. And we as a Jewish community yearn for them to connect and engage and experience joyous Judaism. We've got to find ways to help make that happen. Fingerman said the foundation is looking into how to best provide a virtual camp experience for kids whose camps have canceled their programs. It's more of a challenge than remote school classes because camp ideally involves staying away from desks and sitting at screens. If you go virtual, it's got to be experiential. It's not school. It's got to be camp. We're in the experiential education business. That's a good line. But we're not going to deliver a classroom experience. We've got to deliver a camp and bunk experience. Don't know how they're going to achieve that. Hope they do. In Israel, Israelis will be prohibited from the traditional practice of lighting bonfires on Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer, which this year starts Monday night, lasting for 24 hours, marks the 33rd day in the counting of the days between the holidays of Pesach and Shavuot. It also marks the end of a minor mourning period, recognizing the deaths of thousands of students in the 2nd century, students of the sage Rabbi Akiva. Israel's cabinet last week approved emergency regulations prohibiting bonfires in order to prevent the transmission of the COVID-19 virus. Traditional bonfires and other events that are held yearly at the tomb of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai on Mount Meron will be canceled this year. Instead, the religious services minister will allow three separate bonfires, each led by a prominent rabbi, in the area of the tomb to be held by special permit at different times. No more than 50 people will be permitted to participate in each bonfire. There are usually maybe hundreds of thousands of people, I would say, every year. Women will be allowed equal participation in the bonfires. No one is permitted to enter the tomb, and it will remain closed through May 17th. The community of Meron is open only to residents as of this week. Lag BaOmer is the yard site of Shimon Bar Yochai, a disciple of Rabbi Akiva and a great mystical figure in Jewish tradition, putative author of the Zohar. One interpretation says the bonfires symbolize the light that Shimon Bar Yochai brought to the world. Tens of thousands of mostly Haredi ultra-Orthodox Jews converge directly on Meron on Lag BaOmer every year and spend the whole night and the following day lighting bonfires, studying, and giving first haircuts to boys who turn 3 years old. It's a big celebration, but not this year. The tomb at Meron is said to be the second most visited religious site in Israel after the Kotel, the Western Wall. Well, not this Lag BaOmer. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We welcome back our guest this morning, good friend Sam Glazer, who is a Jewish musical star and author of The Joy of Judaism and celebrates his Judaism in a variety of ways, as a great regular blog. Sam, I don't want to say you're a relentlessly optimistic person, but you are a very upbeat guy. How do you nourish your own neshama at a time when, you know, you can't leave the house much?
Well, that's the whole ironic thing about this situation, in that we perceive that time is limited, that life is fragile. We may know or know people who've lost loved ones. And I think more than ever that we should be aware of every day's importance and the preciousness of our time. So I've seen some people use this as a time to mope and complain and read the news and get more and more discouraged. And yet lockdown doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be depressed. every day is just as precious. As Jews, we have mitzvot that we can do, many of which we're challenged, you know, to perform, like being with a minyan or, you know, that kind of thing, you know, praying together. But there's so many other things that we can do. There's so many opportunities to be giving. Our greatest achievements in life, the things we're going to carry with us to the end of our days, are those acts of kindness. There is so much opportunity for acts of kindness now. People who are shut in, the elderly who can't get out of their homes for fear of catching this. There's a beautiful world out there. LA, you know, where I live, is really green and smog-free right now.
It's kind of stunning. I mean, LA is a place where, you know, if you have to go 10 blocks in your car, it might take you 40 minutes. Not now.
Yeah, not now. No, yesterday I drove to visit my elderly aunt and uncle, you know, for a backyard visit. I'm really inspiring people to take backyard visits, in that it doesn't mean you don't have to see them at all or stop talking to anybody over the age of 70.
Right.
Anyway, I drove at 4:30 p.m. to the valley from the city. That would normally never be
That's
done.
Suicide. Nobody does that.
Yeah, I took my daughter, who made Aliyah last year. The things were getting too crazy in Israel, and you know, their lockdown there was way more draconian.
Absolutely. I mean, they've been on top of this from the beginning, and boy.
You know, yeah, I remember when Netanyahu declared the two-week quarantine from anybody coming into the country, and I was thinking, is he crazy? Is he just trying to end tourism as we know it?
And the answer is no, he was doing the right thing.
He was. It seemingly was jumping the gun, but no.
No, apparently not.
No. So anyway, so she escaped that. It's been so good to have her here. That's been a real silver lining. Our nest went from empty to full.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Yep. It's really nice for the dad, and I think it's a little harder on mom.
Yeah, sometimes it's harder on the kid, too, actually.
Yeah.
My daughter came back from university, you know, because it was all virtual, so what's the difference? And it was safer here than in Boston. Went into a 14-day self-quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
Total, you know, just protection. So, I mean, we called her the prisoner of Azkaban because, you know, you bring the tray, leave it outside the door, walk away, you know, say a couple things. But it's still, it was great to have him back.
The challenge is to focus on our blessings. That's always the challenge in life.
Right, right.
And more now than ever. And there are lots of blessings out there. Every day is still precious.
I wonder, there's a tradition you're supposed to say 100 brachot a day, 100 blessings a day.
Mm-hmm.
There are blessings for all kinds of wonderful things, for seeing a rainbow, for I think there should be blessings for driving through Los Angeles without traffic.
Yes, I agree.
The miraculous, appreciating the miraculous. So you have a home studio, right? Musical
Correct.
Studio. You produce albums for a variety of other Jewish artists and other artists, other musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been able to do any production while this is going on?
Well, in God's great kindness, I usually have like 4 or 5 albums I'm working on simultaneously, and they're usually at various positions in the progress of the production. It's a big undertaking, usually 6 months to a year to make an album. I happen to have 3 albums that were all ready for mix down. An album being ready for mix means that, you know, any given song has 60 or 70 tracks that I have to now combine and make it sound as beautiful and clean as possible. And that's stuff that I usually do here alone. So in the past month and a half, you know, this really hit L.A. anyway around Purim time.
Right.
Right at that time, I was going into a period where I was going to have to mix. And it was hard to buckle down because I was also going into a very busy time in my schedule because I'm traveling every other weekend to Jewish communities around the country.
To perform and, you know.
Yeah, to do that kind of thing.
Right.
So suddenly, I thank God I had some work. I had something I could do. Everything got canceled in terms of...
All the concerts, all the performances, yeah.
I mean, correct.
I think people don't understand the extent of the economic devastation. I mean, people are going 3-4 months without income, and it could be longer.
Yep, that's true.
And you know, what will be restored? Who knows exactly what will happen when we come back?
Yeah, I'm in one of those professions that requires masses of people to gather publicly in close quarters. So,
kind of hard to do a concert. I mean, the virtual concerts online are wonderful, but that's not.
Yeah, I haven't found a way to monetize them. I've been doing them.
Yep, yep.
And teaching. You know, I've got my book since it came out. I've been really striving to be speaking, teaching, you know, doing interviews more. But yeah, it's hard to monetize that stuff. And the bills remarkably still keep coming in.
Yeah, it's funny about that. So you had a lot of work to do, and I actually think that one of the crucial aspects of this of the lockdown and responding to lockdown is staying busy, having work to do. Yeah, sometimes it's fixing all the to-do lists in your house that you've been ignoring for years, and sometimes, but if you can think of a creative project that engages you and works, you work hard at it, I think it keeps you fresh and it makes it, you know, you're not bored, you're just busy.
Yeah, you're absorbed, you're excited, you're taking on something new. And what a concept, you know, taking on something new is one of the greatest ways to avoid the doldrums of repetition in life.
What Jewish practices would you recommend for people? What do you find the most meaningful right now?
Well, one of the basics that we do, which is praying three times a day, is so crucial. It's such a beautiful thing to take 5 minutes out of your afternoon for the mincha afternoon prayers, or when, you know, just before you change in your pajamas at night, you know, right before you get really comfortable, to take that time and do the evening prayers. I can't tell you how much I get out of it. And I think that everybody now is praying without a minyan. It's going to make it hard to go back to a minyan. It's going to be exciting to hear the Torah read again, but it's going to take a long time.
It is. You know, we've been doing... in my shul here in Tucson, my dad and I are doing Shabbat morning services, the two of us, right? Because it's very difficult to take out, manipulate, and chant the Torah by yourself. And so I don't think I'm going to endanger him, and he's not going to endanger me, even though, you know, he's 94, because we're living in the same house. So we go to the shul, we do services with an iPhone Facebook Live presentation. We're chanting Torah. It's such a strange antiseptic experience. And you find yourself, when you're leading that service, staring at the screen a lot. You're supposed to, because that's the camera, watching, you know, and every how many people are watching, and you get sort of obsessed with that instead of what you're supposed to be doing. I'm so glad it's here, but I have to say, it is not exactly the way you want to do stuff.
No, it's not. It's not the way we're built. We're communal people. We want to daven together. We want to go to a kiddush and schmooze and eat herring and spill punch on each other's shoes and, you know, just do all the things that humans do. So it's creating a real hunger for that. I don't think we'll take it for granted in the future.
I think there's a potential for an explosion of just social activity when all this begins to really break and clean up.
Yeah, I agree. And as I was saying in the beginning, God just gives us challenges to see how we're going to be resourceful, not to punish us. The worst punishment is God ignoring us. Getting challenges means that we are capable of overcoming them and triumphing. We are the children of Israel, and Israel, Yaakov, got his name when he was wrestling. We're wrestlers. We're being pushed to wrestle. We would never go to a movie that had no plot. That's why the movie Cats failed so miserably. I just watched that for the first time.
That was really bad.
Yeah, really, really bad. So it just shows you that having a plot and drama and challenge in our lives is what we're all about. That's our name. We are Yisrael. So we are Yisrael, those who struggle. And we don't just accept the lot that God gives us. We fight for it. Abraham became the first Jew, not Noah, because Abraham fought for what he believed in. He fought for the people of Sodom, who weren't even Jewish. He just wanted to make sure that God was acting in a righteous manner. So in that struggle, we grow, and we are being pushed to our limits with this horrible disease.
If you were going to recommend that people study a text, because people are reading all kinds of stuff, the one thing I will say, first of all, you hear from people you haven't heard from in years, which is not so bad. It's nice, actually, reconnecting all over the place. And then the other thing is people are reading, picking up books. They're obviously reading a ton of stuff online. But if everything you see in the news is about, you know, coronavirus, it gets old pretty fast. Suddenly you begin to discover other texts. What book, besides your, The Joy of Judaism, do you recommend that people pick up now?
Well, I thought you were giving me a lead-in here to promote my book.
You can.
Which is called The Joy of Judaism. It's about finding joy in challenging times. So, you know.
This couldn't be much more challenging, could it?
Yeah, so the timing of releasing this seems to be pretty good. And thank God sales are good. We just went into Kindle mode. I was hard copy for the first several months, and now it's I have Kindles out there available. I have been getting great comfort reading the works of Rabbi David Aaron.
Oh.
Those books, and it really doesn't matter. Like, you could throw a dart at the board with his books up on there, and any one that the dart hits is going to inspire you, deeply inspire you. And it speaks to Americans wherever they hold. You know, it doesn't matter, Reform, Conservative, or Orthodox. Really, I mean, I can't imagine more universal texts. So anyway, I've been reading those, and my daughter, who came home from Israel, has been invading my English language library. And also, sure enough, it's those David Aaron books that are really giving us a lot of comfort right now.
You know, it's funny. I was going to suggest, a lot of people don't know much about Kabbalah. Aaron, of course, writes, he writes really beautiful mystical books, I'd say. So it's a good time to, I think it's a great time to just pick up an area of Jewish knowledge you don't know, whether it's mysticism or philosophy or if it's Mishnah, whatever it is. You know, for me, this is an incredible time to just widen and deepen your Judaism. You can't go and practice it. You can't go to a bunch of events except online. But boy, you can really dig into something deep. And that's something that's a luxury that we don't always have the time for.
Yeah, and I think one thing about David's books is that they're informed by Kabbalah, but they're really about everyday life.
Right.
They're very real world, coming from a guy who didn't grow up in a religious home, you know, but found this and treasures it.
It's spirituality in a meaningful way. Sam, thanks so much. Listen, stay fresh, stay healthy.
Thank you, brother.
And I will look forward to talking to you again soon.
And send hugs to your papa.
I will love so much.
Thanks so much.
Take care, Sam.
When we come back on To Jewish, we'll have a final musical play out from Sam Glazer.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town, amazing dining, and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Mara B. Gad, author of The Color of Love, a story of a mixed-race Jewish girl. Our playout this morning comes from cantor Dudu Fischer, Gesher Tzar Me'od. The whole world is a narrow bridge. The main thing is not to be afraid, a teaching of Nachman of Bratslav, the melody by Shlomo Karlbach. My friends, may you have a healthy week, God willing, a Shavua Tov, a good Lag BaOmer without a bonfire, and a good week and a week we pray of peace.
Gesher tzar meod kol haolam kulo Gesher tzar meod Gesher tzar meod kol haolam kulo Gesher tzar meod Gesher tzar meod Yesher tzar meod kol haolam kulo. Yesher tzar meod, yesher tzar meod.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.